Today's teshu is on case 19 in the book of collections called Mumin Khan. Case 19 is entitled Nansen's Ordinary Mind is the Way. Joshu asked Nansen, "What is the way?" "Ordinary mind is the way," Nansen replied. "Shall I try to seek after it?" Joshu asked. "If you try for it, you will become separated from it," responded Nansen. "How can I know the way unless I try for it?" persisted Joshu. Nansen said, "The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion, not knowing is confusion. When you have really reached the true way beyond doubt, you will find it is vast and boundless as outer space. How can it be talked about at the level of right and wrong, knowing and not knowing?" With these words, Joshu came to a sudden realization. Mumon's comment. Nansen dissolved and melted away before Joshu's questions and could not offer a plausible explanation. Even though Joshu came to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can fully understand it. Mumon's verse. The spring flowers, the autumn moon, summer breezes, winter snow. If useless things do not clutter our mind, we have the best days of our life. Well, today is the second day of our Rohatsu. Still here, which is like a success in itself. It does happen from time to time that Sesshin feels very overwhelming. Not just the first time we do it, but even the second or third time. I would say my first 10 sessions, I regularly plotted on the cushion, how can I just leave? And maybe not 10, maybe 7 or 8, but you get my point. And even now, there is a part of me which says, are you kidding me? You took it on yourself again. my reality is that in the hub busyness and mad hotness of the world, by the time a session arrives, I have forgotten the taste of morning sits. Even though I intellectually know it, like there is a taste of deep, deep, deep silence that one cannot get outside of sesshin, even when you practice very regularly. There is something about sit after sit after sit after sit, that our mind becomes ordinary. And I'll spend a lot of time today talking about what does this ordinary mean. But when the mind is ordinary, the taste of that mind, the feeling of that ordinariness, that's all worth any of the tiredness or pain in the legs for me. And that's like, if I have an internal dialogue, one part would be saying, Kriti, are you crazy? You're doing another sesshin. You're making people go through this pain. And the other part says, Absolutely. Absolutely. If we couldn't touch this ordinary, deep, still, dark place in our own minds, how on earth we are gonna have any sanity? Absolutely. Are you really sure, Kriti? People are gonna come to interview room thinking, oh gosh, I hope this can be my last interview and I can after this just go home. I have never been so tired in my life, Sensei. It's okay. I'm glad you're here. Joshua asked Nansen, what is the way? Or we could have said, what is Buddhism? What's the path? What's the path to sanity? Nansen, one of the greatest Zen teachers in Tang Dynasty, who was teacher of Joshu is the person who came up with Mukon. And Joshu was amazing. Joshu apparently lived for 120 years. So this is the time when Joshu is not a teacher but a student of Nansen and goes to Nansen and says, what is the way? And Nansen replies, ordinary mind is the way. Yesterday we were also talking about Vinoba Bhave, one of the foremost spiritual heirs of Gandhi in India. And I've been saying things from this book, Mahaguha Me Pravesh. And there are several parts of this book where Vinoba lovingly called Baba. Vinoba used to call his own self Baba. Like he would refer to himself and say, Baba should now sit, you know. Baba should now eat 2 almonds. He had a very measured life. Baba would sleep for 17 minutes, like that kind of measuredness. So in several parts of this book, Baba says, and I just love this name, Baba. It resonates with me deeply. Baba says, you know, I'll say it in Hindi and then I'll translate. Jab man, jab chit, sahaj hota hai, samadhi apne aap lag jati hai. The key word here is sahaj. So what he's saying, translation of the whole sentence is, when our mind is natural, samadhi comes on its own. Okay, so sahaj means natural, easy, or you could say ordinary. So the con here, George Nansen and Baba are saying the same thing. What is the way? How do I reach enlightenment? Or how do I reach sanity? And the answers that Nansen and Baba are giving are, well, natural mind, relaxed mind, easy mind, that's the way to enlightenment. Or ordinary mind. Now it's confusing because ordinarily, I get up in the morning outside of retreat structure and I'm just frantic. As soon as I get up, soon after that, I have like 10 calls lined up with my colleagues in India. And I sometimes wake up in a worry, oh gosh, I have to face that colleague again. And there are all kinds of complications at job. And when I'm waking up, my colleagues in India are about to go to sleep. And there is always this tussle if I wake up early or make them go to bed late. Yeah. And we are talking across in this twilight zone. It's like, is this work done? And have you visited those farmers? And what about those soil samples? And how do you talk about climate change with poor farmers who have barely enough to eat? And there are all kinds of emotional tussle combined with physical tiredness and on and on. Is that mind ordinary mind? Oh, that's my ordinary day, right? If I haven't gotten up way earlier and done some stretches and maybe some meditation, that's my day. Is that the ordinary mind we are talking about here? I would say everyone would agree no, right? But there is something about the kind of ordinary mind Nansen and Baba are talking about that we have forgotten to experience. The ordinary mind that is being talked about here is the mind which is not in freeze, fight, flight, or fawn. I call them the four F's. Four F's. Okay, so let's go over them again. Our brains have several parts to them. The old part, the limbic brain, right? That's the same brain similar to what reptiles have today. And that brain, when it sees a snake, it flees, right? It runs away. So, a flight brain. Or you could say, well, one snake sees another snake and they are fighting over their territory, or maybe they have a prey. Sorry, they are the prey, but they have some food there. They're fighting over a mouse. That's fight. Or if they are fighting someone bigger than them, that's also fight. So fight, flight. The other is also reptiles have it very frequently, is freezing. Like a chameleon changing its color and just freezing there and hoping no one sees it. Like, of course, cats also do it, like no one is seeing them when they're hiding around, thinking they are hidden. It's like somehow freezing will save me, right? And then the fourth one, which is not talked about often, is called fawn. Fawn, FAWN, which is a stage, which is something which we have before we freeze. Sometimes it's like excessive praise for just to survive. It's a survival mechanism, right? Just to survive, that somehow wherever there is apparent power, you offer excessive praise. It's like, and there are different shades to all of this, and sometimes all of them are combined. So I would say that is the hot, mad hot world modes of operation, right? This is what my ordinary day without any practice of movement, meditation, yoga, grief work, This is what I would keep repeating all the time if I wasn't doing any kind of practice. Someone has something critical to say about me, which happens at work often. I would go in defensive mode, fighting mode, or I would just shut up. I wouldn't say anything, or I would excessively praise my boss or manager. I say my in a universal way. I have a good manager, friend, boss, so I'm not, I think it's a pretty good relationship, but I'm just giving you as an example that we tend to get into that. When we face stressful situation, we get into fight, flight, fawn, freeze. Yeah? And also, we can have different modes of operation with different sets of people. With my mom, I'm always ready to fight. It's still my tendency. That's true. Right? With some colleagues who are intimidating, without me noticing it, I go into freeze. Like, their apparent power is too much for me to handle. And on and on. Does that make sense? So fight, flight, freeze, and fawn, those are part of our normal, regular day. That mind is not ordinary mind in the sense Nansen or Baba are talking about here. Those minds are not relaxed. You know, one time, one of the teachers I do koan work with, her name is Joan Hobrichs. She's in New Jersey. She's a psychotherapist and a beautiful, very beautiful human being who for the first time told me what a feminine Zen could look like. Like, you know, in our Zen tradition, I am the first woman teacher in our lineage, so I had to dig up names of women ancestors who are not technically in our lineage to feel like I have a sense of connection to the feminine, because the otherwise the lineage is man after man after man after man after man after man for 2500 years. So Joan, I was doing a session with Joan Hobrichs Sangha, Heart Circle Sangha in New Jersey, and she said something that at that point just blew my mind. Like, what? Are you kidding me? She said, and a relaxed mind is an enlightened mind. First of all, it was like relaxed, like Sashin, like you make me work so hard, I'm sitting on my butt for 12 hours a day, like why don't you just send us all on vacation, like what's the point? I almost get angry and defensive, like what's the point of what you are saying? Like you have to sit hard and face machine day after day after day and then maybe you can read someplace. She didn't argue back with me. She was very, very gentle. It took me some time to realize what she was saying. She was saying the same thing that Nansen and Baba are saying. The mind's raw state, baby state. Not that all babies are, you know, in that relaxed mind state. Some babies are very distressed. But babies have a natural trust and engagement sometimes, which is not fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. Before babies have been socialized into agreeing with what parents say, right, before they have been taught to be afraid of this and that and flee away from those kind of people and on, They can, they don't always have it, but they can have a deep trusting mind. We human beings, by the time we reach a meditation hall of any tradition, have been indoctrinated to fear so much, flee so much, freeze in response to so much, get distracted so much, and not notice so much. I talked about this in at last session, and this is so important to me that I'm going to repeat it this time. You know, because it gives us a sense of amount of work we have to do collectively. We might be at different places individually, but the collective challenge is humongous. Humongous. Okay? About a third of people, adults in the United States, have faced domestic violence. 1 in 8 people in this country have seen their mothers beaten up. 1 in 5 were sexually molested as kids. 1 in 4 were beaten to the point that they have marks on their bodies. Why am I repeating these statistics? You see, we are either traumatized ourselves, or we live with people or take care of people who are traumatized. We are surrounded by trauma. And what that trauma has done to us in, you know, it just has hardened our fight, flight, freeze, and fawn responses. These traumas have gotten passed over from one generation to next, and to next, and to next, and to next. Last session, we did a grief circle in the middle of our Zen retreat. You know, part of me was debating, should we do it this time or not? I have not made up my mind. I'm still figuring my way out. But regardless of us doing a grief circle, I think it is of utmost importance that all of us face the trauma that is in our body system at a personal level, and also the collective trauma. We might have had a relatively easy childhood with loving parents, or at least one loving parent, or maybe there was some love and some complication there, which is often the case. But collectively, we live in a soup, we live in a bowl. Our collective body is traumatized. That collective traumatized body necessarily reacts with freeze, fight, flight, and fawn. We have this challenge facing humanity that no generation has faced before, which is the very planet we live on could be inching towards extinction. And we human beings are sitting in a soup of trauma. We can't act right. When we get into activism, activists respond to each other with fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. That is exactly why it is important for us to come to a place like Sashin, a meditation retreat, where we can access a mind which is beyond fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. The way to sanity is our relaxed mind, but reaching relaxed mind is not straightforward. One of the ways we reach a relaxed mind, which is not meditation retreat, the traditional meditation retreat, is grieving. I was telling a story at one of the Saturday Sit talks, and some of you have heard it in another context. When I was traveling in India last time, I had a very stressful train journey, and I was in a train overnight, and around me there were a lot of young men. Even though I'm 40 now, I felt scared. Some of them were drunk and they were passing comments to me. I was the only woman in that bunk, and I put blankets on me that the train staff gives you, and I put my suitcase behind my back because I was afraid my bag would be stolen, and I did not go to use the restroom for close to 12-13 hours. I wanted to, but I was just afraid my stuff would be stolen. And then I got off the train and I still couldn't find a place to pee. I had to catch another connecting train, and there was no restroom on the platform I was on. So I will not go over the whole story, but you know, I was stressed out from that experience. I was stressed out, but I came back. I went wherever I had to go. I went through my trip in India. I came back here. I had forgotten all about that incident. But when I was sitting that Saturday sit, when I first talked about it, breathing deeply, going to my hara, okay, really staying with the hara. A thought hara is our friend. Really, you forget all about your con, what you're working on, that's fine. Keep your hara thought, if you trust my experience. My hara was taught, I was just working on something else, and then suddenly this memory came up of me feeling the stress of being in the train, not being able to leave my seat, and you know what eventually happened on that day was I could find no place to pee. There was not even a barricade or some place I could hide myself, so I literally ended up peeing in public. There weren't too many people directly around me. They were on other platforms, but I just put my suitcase around me and just somehow peed there. It was just impossible to continue whatever I had to do that day. In the sit, I released that mini trauma. Like I released some, I allowed some tears. Like my body remembered that stress. My body remembered that stress, and I had forgotten the story, but my body remembered the stress. What happens when we grieve actively, and if we do it intelligently and wisely, and don't re-traumatize ourselves, grieving is one way in which body releases stress. When it releases stress once, then it doesn't react in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn later. What am I trying to say here? One, I am saying that meditation retreat is not the only way. Movement of body, grief work, making sounds, there are many different things that we can do to our bodies to make them release those stresses that make us react in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. Now, yesterday I was saying when thoughts come up, just like I don't control what Imtiaz thinks about, I don't control what I think about. That is still true. And some thoughts require us to, they keep coming back. So they require us to release something around them. Okay? I am saying this because it's not that our first role when we meditate is to bear witness to whatever thoughts and feelings come up without judging them, without getting too entangled in them. And sometimes when the thoughts and feelings are persistent, we need to pay attention to them in a way which is different from just bearing witness. It's almost like they need a motherly witnessing, not So let's see, where are we now? Joshua asked Nansen, what is the way? Ordinary mind is the way, Nansen replied. Joshua asked, shall I try to seek after it? If you try to seek it, you will become separated from it. Joshua asked again, how can I know the way unless I try for it? Nansen said, the way is not a matter of knowing and not knowing. Knowing is delusion, not knowing is confusion. When we have faced our deep personal, interpersonal, and collective memories, and that will be necessarily an endless process. Right? How can we ever face trauma accumulated over 2500 years? So we have to keep working all our lives. Okay? But in some way, to get to the taste of that ordinary mind that is being talked about here, we do have to try, right? We sit every day, but this trying is a con in itself. When we try too hard, hara is too tight, we are not taking any break, we are grasping after the goal of a clear mind, we are far from it. But if we are not trying at all, if we are too relaxed, not trying, taking every break, sleeping in every break, not focusing on our hara at all, then also we don't find it. So the way to ordinary mind requires a balance of its own, like constantly being on our growing edges, but without making this like without being greedy about it ourselves. There is no race to finish our koan work. There is no race to do too many koans. It doesn't matter. Our task is endless. There's one more thing that I want to talk about, which teared me up yesterday and today. When we read our gratitude prayer for the great family, there is a line which says, gratitude to wild beings, our brothers teaching secrets, freedoms and ways, who share with us their milk, self-complete, brave and aware. I grew up in a lacto-vegetarian culture where we didn't eat meat, but milk, yogurt, buttermilk, cottage cheese, it's called paneer in Hindi, cottage cheese. That was just part of our life day in and day out. Lacto-vegetarian. I had heard about it. I had heard about it, but I had never watched. There are videos online of how dairy cows, mother cows, are treated. And I chanced upon a video. I was shivering for a long time after watching that video. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, our wild brothers and sisters, thank you, our wild brothers and sisters, you share your milk with us, thank you, gratitude to you. But what is actually done in most cases is that the mother cow is injected with artificial hormones, oxytocins. She's forced to share her milk. And not just that, she's forced to produce and share the milk in the process, not because anyone probably wants it necessarily, because of the statistics I read earlier that a third of us have faced domestic violence and fifth of us have been sexually molested as children. We are so traumatized as a society. We traumatized wild beings. We traumatized cows and buffaloes and chicken and ducks and whales and on. Not just like because they are in cages, that's traumatizing enough. The videos I saw were gory, 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 capturing of how our wild relatives are beaten up, like slight irritation of the factory farm worker and they would just punch. It's like the animal brothers and sisters become a punching bag, and if they have a rod in their hand, they would punch the cow, buffalo, goat with a rod. So our societies, you know, it's one thing to thank the beings for sharing the gifts with us. I know that, you know, those are gifts. Under right conditions, when we honor our animal brothers and sisters, those are truly gifts that we should receive humbly. I have never eaten meat in my life, but I totally trust that we can have a codependent, loving relationship. Even if we eat meat, we can have a loving relationship. Even if we drink milk, we can have a loving relationship with wild beings, where we are not greedy about what we get from them and we don't abuse them. but I have been sensitized to, I've been sensitized to something I wasn't aware of. And that's part of the reason we are completely vegan this time. We still have honey, we still have ghee around, but it's not used in cooking during retreat. I could not, you know, I love, as a way of admission, I'll say it, I love eating eggs. I really, really do. I have eaten eggs in times in my life I was so sick and allergic to so much, I couldn't eat too much else. I've gotten, in fact, the reason I started eating eggs was as a little kid, I wouldn't be eating anything, and someone had me try egg outside our house, and I said, oh, I like it, I'll eat it. And my mother would physically wear gloves, and she would put mask around her face when she made eggs, because she really didn't want to touch eggs. Like, growing up in a Hindu culture, it was really hard for her. But since childhood, I've loved eggs. And I would still eat eggs if someone brings me some from there. I think I will eat it, I haven't decided. But about 3-4 weeks ago, I decided I'm not gonna eat eggs. And there is a little part of me which says, oh, it doesn't matter, Kriti, you could probably, I miss them. But when I think about trauma being passed on to our wild relatives, the sound is no. Joshu asked Nansen, what is the way? Ordinary mind is the way, Nansen replied. Shall I try to seek after it? Joshu asked. If you try for it, you will become separated from it, responded Nansen. How can I know the way unless I try for it, persisted Joshu. Nansen said, the way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion, not knowing is confusion. When you have really reached the true way beyond doubt, you will find it as vast and boundless as outer space. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong? With these words, Joshu came to a sudden realization. There is no right and wrong. There is no right and wrong in Sashin. I know we have many rules, but the point of those rules is to simplify our lives, to take away choices so that we don't have to spend time deciding, should I do this or should I do that? Right? We spend a lot of our energy deciding when we have too many options, should I do this or should I do that? Now it's decided. We get up at 5:10 or 5:15. This is the time we show up for eating. This is the time for showers. This is the time for chanting. Taking choices away so that the mind has more probabilities, more possibilities of becoming ordinary. Okay? This is not about becoming a good student of Zen. This is not to impress anyone. This is not about being good. At last, Sashin Imtiaz gave a talk which said, it's not about being good. It's not about being holy. It's about being empty. When we are ordinary, we are empty in the sense Buddhism talks about. Right? So the whole system of Sesshin is designed to help us become ordinary and empty. So our task today and next 3-4 days that we are here for is to keep working with our hara, keep the hara taught, keep repeating your phrase of your koan at each out-breath. When memories come up, they are not yours, they are not ours, they are from the collective unconscious. There should be no attempt to control them. We are only watching them as loving witness. If they come up again and again, there might be something to grieve. But together we are inching towards, it's always an impossible task. We have a lot of collective trauma to face, but we are doing our bit.